You're listening to Beating Goliath, the blood, sweat, and tears of healthcare startups. In each episode, we interview a founder or an executive and find out how they're punching above their weight and winning. We'll also have cameos from angel investors and VCs. So if you want to get juicy insider tips, be sure to tune in. And here's your host, tech entrepreneur, advisor, and angel investor, Joyce Tang.
Today we have a special guest who has exited her company. Yay! I've known her for several years and I've witnessed her entrepreneurial journey. She is Dr. Camille Newton. She is the founder and president of PureWick. Hey Camille, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me here, Joyce.
So can you give us some key stats? When did you start PureWick and when did you get it sold?
PureWick was founded in early 2013, and we sold the company to C.R. Bard, which is now owned by Becton Dickinson, in June of 2017.
So that has been quite a short journey. And by short, I mean all the actions compressed into several years. That's a pretty nice victory for you.
Thank you. It felt like forever.
I'm sure when you're in the middle of it, it probably feels like you're sucked into this tornado and it's just every day you're trying to survive and thrive and try to get out of it, but get out of it with victory dance.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy for a few years there.
Did you have any co-founder, by the way?
My husband, Ray Newton, was the principal co-founder, and we also built the company with three other gentlemen. Mike Jackson, who had expertise in marketing, Joe Forehand, who had expertise in manufacturing, and Fred Phillips, who was our attorney.
Can you tell us what PureWick does and its value proposition?
Well, PureWick is a female external catheter. And to illustrate its value, basically, I kind of have to tell you how I found PureWick.
I'm
a home visiting physician. Well, performing house calls, I saw women lying in wet diapers, getting rashes and pressure sores and family members struggling to change them. I had patients giving up and resorting to using Foley catheters and then developing repeated urinary tract infections. Men had the option of using a condom catheter, or men could sit up on the side of the bed and use a urinal, but there wasn't an option for women. Hospitals were looking for alternatives to bedpans and Foley catheters. Hospitals were being fined by Medicare and being publicly shamed for catheter-associated urinary tract infections, as well as hospital-acquired pressure sores, falls, bedpan injuries. Anyway, PureWick was able to help with all those problems that were already in the healthcare profession. There was not any real competition. There was nothing else on the market that works like PureWick works. It's kind of like a Gillette business model. Mm-hmm. The hospitals can use their own pump, but the home users buy this pump called a dry dock, and the wicks are inexpensive, disposable consumables. So it's meeting a lot of the needs that hospitals are looking for, and at the same time, it's super inexpensive. And the great thing about selling to hospitals is you have a one-time sale, which is hard to get. But then the hospitals just keep buying and buying. So you don't have to really, I mean, you market to them, remind them they have it available, but you don't have to keep selling to the hospital.
And you know your end users really, really well. And that's, I think, is a big thing for you going into these hospitals and talking to the nurses about it, because you see it firsthand. You administer it to some of your patients, right? So when you're going into the hospitals and talking to the nurses about this invention, you really are able to talk about all the advantages of using it and the reduction in infection cases. So do you find that reducing infection was the biggest value prop that caused them to want to sign on the dotted line?
Both reducing infection and helping to prevent pressure injuries and diaper dermatitis. And also reducing labor costs, back injuries for caregivers, reducing falls. It actually helps in a lot of different departments in the hospital, and it's inexpensive.
Well, reducing workers' injuries, the nurses will love you for it, and I'm sure the hospital administrators will love you for that.
Yep.
So these are like the side advantages, side value prop of your product, which is very interesting. I think it's something that founders should really pay attention to as well. Not only is there a primary benefits to the product, but there could be these supplemental benefits as well, which might end up being the reasons that customers would buy. So we know that in the healthcare space, things move a lot slower. And you've mentioned that the sales cycle going into hospitals is very long. But once you're in, they just put you on the list and they just keep buying. So that's wonderful. I remember you having to knock on a lot of doors before you were able to get your first sale. So can you tell us about when you got your first paid customer?
We had been trialing PureWick for years. Mm-hmm. We were trying to raise money. We were trying to sell the company. We were trying to make something of this product. But during this whole process, we were also developing the product. The original PureWick was a little hard piece of PVC pipe wrapped in napkin. We couldn't sell something like that. So we were trialing it. One of the places that we trialed it at was a board and care that in Vista, California, and the Borden Care was owned by a nurse who was a WOCN, which is a wound and ostomy care nurse. And she had trialed the product in her facility with us. She even tried it herself, and she knew that it was safe, that it could help prevent diaper-associated dermatitis, that it was comfortable, that the patients loved it, that the benefits far outweighed any potential risk. And she was extremely beneficial in getting it into Tri-City Hospital. And I can touch more on that later, but getting it into that first hospital was extremely important for us.
What have been some of the memorable rejections that's hit you the hardest?
Well, Joyce, you know, as a physician myself, I felt like all physicians would see the benefit of this product. Yet I called my friends, my fellow coworkers, the people from my residency program at UC Irvine, my medical school, St. Louis University, and not one physician was interested in being a champion for this product. Some of them even quit returning my calls.
Wow.
And I felt very rejected by my fellow physicians. It was actually the nursing community who stepped forward and were willing to be champions for this product.
Oh, that's very interesting. Do you think that that might be because they really witnessed, they experienced it? They are really the ones at the absolute front line of that care. And so they're able to immediately see the benefits of the product?
I think it is. They're seeing what problems from urine management are doing with the patient. And the doctors are like three steps away from that, and they think that urine management isn't their responsibility, even if they're dealing with the outcomes of it.
You know, your experience of being turned down by fellow physicians with whom you might have gone to medical school with, might have gone to training with, that story actually happens to quite a few physician founders. I've heard that story a number of times, and I can only imagine how disappointed you must have felt. And then at some point, not even getting your calls answered by your peers anymore. I'm sure you were concerned that you might turn into a bit of a pest by pushing the product, but then at the same time, you know that there's value there, so it must be so conflicted. Was there ever a time when you felt, gosh, this may just not go anywhere at all? I'm knocking on doors, I'm talking to my friends, and nobody's getting it. Nobody's willing to just crack the door open just yet. How long has it been? And was there a time when you felt, forget it?
I think my husband was very worried. And over the period of several years, my practice was at a minimal level. I was devoting a lot of time to PureWick. We had a second mortgage on the house. We used our retirement savings. I never really thought that it wouldn't be successful. I didn't know how it would be successful. It was a kind of a scary period, but I don't think I ever really thought that it wouldn't be successful.
You really had a lot of skin in the game. You're using your own money, you are using your own time, and that's an opportunity cost because otherwise you could have taken in more patients, right? Visiting more patients, generating profit there with your medical practice, but instead you're really devoting a lot of time on this venture and putting it in. Versus I'm sure there are other founders that really would not have much skin in the game. They want to use other people's money and other people's money only. But for you, you're diving right in. At what point did you decide you had to fundraise?
Well, we started with the Connect program, I believe it was in 2013. And originally when we started with them, we thought that it would help us get connections to people in the healthcare industry,
right,
to UCSD, the potential strategic investors or acquirers. And they really talked to us a lot about the need to raise money. At that time, we didn't have a working prototype. Then over the following few years, we started really trying to raise money. But at the same time, we were developing our prototype. And it took probably 3 years before my husband actually figured out a way to make PureWick over with off-the-shelf parts where you could just make it on an assembly line. We were making efforts over that whole period to raise money, but I will tell you, no one was interested in investing in us. It wasn't until we had sales that anyone was interested in investing.
Was it because it is so novel? Tell us a little bit about the FDA also, because I recall for your product, you didn't actually need FDA approval, right? It's not quite in that category.
It's a what they call class one exempt. Mm-hmm. So it's because it's external to the body. It's kind of in the same category as sanitary pads or diapers. You don't have to go through clinical trials. You just have to show that you're making it in a clean facility. It has to be registered with the facility. You have to have good record keeping practices. And what really helped us get it going is once we figured out how to make it with off-the-shelf parts, Mike Jackson already had a facility in place that was selling teeth whitening equipment. And we were able to register PureWick as another medical device at his already ISO certified facility, and we were able to start making and selling them.
So even despite that, you were still not having a lot of luck with investors until you got your first check, so to speak. So for you going forward, do you have any fundraising tips for other founders?
Well, we were told by people, you need to focus on raising money, focus on raising money. And when we started talking about how we were testing different prototypes, we had people tell us, why are you spending so much money trying to develop your prototype? You need to focus on raising money. And I think that's kind of backwards. You know, if you have sales, once we had sales, and really our first sale was in January of 2016. That's when Tri-City Hospital made their first purchase order. And we opened up a private placement to friends and family in February of 2017. At that time, we had one hospital buying, two hospitals trialing, and we were able to raise $400,000 in about 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. I think that people need to really focus on testing their prototypes and getting some sales or customer feedback in place, especially if it's not, you know, if you don't have to go through deep clinical trials. But if you can get sales in, raising money is a heck of a lot easier.
So did you find that at that point, once you're able to tell the people that you're recording, the investors that you're recording, that, hey, now we got our first check, or now this is a solid pilot site that may actually buy, then they're just lining up to give you money?
Yes. And also the first hospital that was buying it, we were getting really, really good feedback from that hospital. Like the purchasing department sent an email saying, when can I get more of these wicks, which were at that point being made very slowly on an assembly line, he was saying, I've never seen my nurses this crazy about a new product. If you can't get sales, then at least have product that you're giving to people to get feedback from and get valid testing. And I think that would help a lot with raising money.
I agree. That's the kind of marketing that you just can't beat. Some companies have very glossy sales slick and sales reps that go around touting the benefits. But if you have the customer, a nursing manager that actually comes out and say, wow, I can't have enough of this. This is great. That is huge. Camille, what are some of the challenges of getting a novel product into a hospital?
The biggest challenge of getting a product into the hospital is trying to understand what a value analysis committee is and what they are looking for in the hospital. If you just hand product to a nurse and say, here, take this into the hospital, that really isn't realistic because being a champion for a new product is really difficult. So what we have done is we created a package to help nurses be a champion for a product. The value analysis committees were set up in hospitals all around the country, and they're all looking for very similar things. There's an infection preventionist, so you need to show how your product helps prevent infection. There are WOCNs or wound and ostomy care nurses, so you need to be able to show how it doesn't cause injury and better yet, if it can prevent skin injury. There's a purchasing department on the committee, so you need to show value for your product and how it's going to save the hospital money. And they also require that a product be tested in the hospital. So you need to make it easy for the nurse or the infection preventionist, whoever's running the test in the hospital, to do their test. And part of that is having survey forms for their nurses that are testing the product already made up. So each individual champion doesn't have to make up their own survey form. You need to write up instructions for use because the value analysis committee is going to require that they have instructions for use before they test the product. If you don't provide all these things to the nurses, then the nurses have to come up with all this stuff themselves, and it's putting roadblocks into their being a champion. So you need to give this package to this potential champion for your product and say, I'm going to hold your hand and I'm going to walk you through this process step by step and make it easy for you to be a champion for this product.
That's very great advice because I'm sure a lot of founders and inventors are so focused on the product and making it work and even just the general marketing that they sometimes may not pay as close attention to how to really navigate the labyrinth of hospital approval process, which involves committees and such. So that's very helpful. So as founders have to do a lot. They have to fundraise, as you've mentioned, figure out how to improve the products. They have to try to do more of a product market fit along the way and dodge some bullets and try to make sure they're not being crushed by the Goliath in their industry. Who was the Goliath that wanted to crush you during this journey?
I think the biggest challenge that we had was that there was nothing like PureWick out on the market. So our biggest challenge was doubt that it would work. And people just couldn't believe that this little tiny wick would actually take enough urine away. And Joyce, you're going to laugh when you hear how we were able to prove to nurses that PureWick could pick up a full stream of urine. I was raised in a Catholic family and was very private. And anyway,
oh, this is interesting.
Short, my husband made a video of me actually urinating in it. And we initially made the video for investors to show them that it would work. We ended up walking around to nurses' stations in hospitals, showing this video clip of me urinating into a PureWick, and and I was well hydrated.
You've got to be. You got to be a good, give a good demo.
I have to say I took one for a team, but it proved that it would work.
That's fun and sort of embarrassing and awkward at the same time, I'm sure.
You know, that video on YouTube now has over 20,000 views.
Okay. Now, that could be 20,000 people who know just a little bit too much about you at this point.
Yeah.
Very interesting. You must have had some awkward stares when they were watching the video and they look at you. And
Yeah, it used to be when I would play the video, I'd have to leave the room because I was so embarrassed.
That is so funny, contrasting with your Catholic upbringing. So you mentioned that when you sold into your first paying customer, that was huge. Do you think that was the big break for you, or was there another?
That was probably the biggest break for us. Mm-hmm. And having my husband figure out a way to make it with off-the-shelf parts so that we could make it on an assembly line, that was a huge break for us.
So it's part getting your first sale and then part product improvement, actually manufacturing process improvement. That's great.
The way we were making them or trying to design them for several years before would have required machining and would have required a huge amount of investment to start sales. And so having this way to make them where you could actually sell them without putting a lot of money in up front was how we were able to get into the first hospital. And that, if you look at those original wicks that we made, I mean, they were taped together. We would take them into hospitals and people would say, this looks like something you made in your garage. And we would, you know, shift our weight uncomfortably in front of them. But they worked. They worked really well. And it was having that ability to get it out there and into the market was really huge.
So you have made some smart moves there. But I'm sure along the way, like many founders, you would have gotten some advices that are just not helpful whatsoever. Can you tell us what some of those are?
Well, yeah, we have received lots and lots of advice over the years. And you just take in what you think will work for you and you try to just let the rest slide through. And I'll tell you, Joyce, people get really mad when you don't take their advice.
Oh, yeah.
One of the biggest things, I remember presenting to a local incubator, and after my presentation, they went around the room and told every single person, told me, you need a good CEO. Well, three times we tried to bring in people who look great on paper, talented leadership, and we ended up losing a lot of stock in the company. And it was actually you, Joyce. You probably remember all these conversations you had who said, listen, when you bring someone on and you're talking to bringing them into the company and giving them stock options, have milestones for them. You know, don't just give them money up front and trust that and stock options up front and trust that they're going to live up to their expectations. Ultimately, we ended up never having a CEO, and I did my best to herd my chickens through the hoops that we went through. Another piece of advice that we got was that I should quit my job and just focus on running the company to show that I was all in. I later read that that's actually not good advice, that founders, entrepreneurs who keep their day job are much more likely to be successful. And part of the reason is that when you go through dry periods,
right,
where you need to stall or tread water or pivot, you're able to have that space where you can tread water for a while and not make headway and go back to it when you have some sort of breakthrough later on. Mm-hmm. If I had quit my job early on, I think that we would have had to call it quits because I would have had to go back to work and start making money. That's another piece of advice. We also had people who told us that our company wasn't really worth anything until we got Medicare approval. We'd never get any sales. To this day, we still don't have Medicare approval, and we're now in over 800 hospitals.
That is amazing. Some of the founders I've spoken to who've gotten their companies acquired have always said they learned a lot and would have done certain things differently. I'm sure that might be what you are experiencing too, like structuring the company differently, raising or not raising from certain investors. If you were to start another one, what would you do differently?
Well, first of all, like your advice with our CEO, is that I would try to make sure that everybody who had stock options in the company had milestones that they had to reach before they received those stock options. I would like to see all the founding board members put skin in the game. Also, I found out after we had sold our company is that if you have your company for 5 years before you sell it, there's like a huge tax break for you.
Oh.
It would have saved I don't know, at least $1 million in taxes if we had waited another year before we sold our company. But for the most part, I think we would have done things mostly the same and definitely would have went the same founding board that we had.
Oh, darn it. But of course, when it's a perfect time to sell, you want to sell. You don't want to dilly-dally linger on because the market could change. So many things could change. And you wouldn't want to do that for just this particular tax reasons. So I guess we'll have to invite an attorney on sometime to talk about that. Now, here's another question. Final question. I love to ask my guest, if you can go back in time, just like in the movie Back to the Future, what's something you'll tell your younger self or bring your younger self?
You know, Joyce, in the movie Back to the Future, if they change any one thing, it changes the full outcome later on. So I've had some huge setbacks in my life that I look back on and I think that was such a horrible thing at the time. Like, my father getting dementia, you know, or getting fired from my first job as a physician. But I look back on those and I think if those things hadn't happened, where I am today wouldn't have happened. So if I were to know that I could go back and talk to my former self, I would have to know that I wouldn't be changing the outcome before I would have any conversation at all. I think I would go back to my former self and say, you know, you're going to go through some really, really rough periods in your life. And you're going to have some times where you're going to feel like a total failure, but everything's going to come out okay in the end. And so just have faith in yourself and have faith that everything's going to turn out okay.
That's great advice. I hear that quite often from founders who have gone through this roller coaster ride, building a startup, exiting at the end. And a lot of times what I do hear is exactly like you say, you wanted to tell your younger self, you can do it. Just hang in there and just work hard. I think that is such valuable advice. Now, with that, I wanted to thank you again, Camille, for coming on and joining us and sharing all your insights.
Well, thank you, Joyce. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Beating Goliath. I hope you were able to get some useful takeaways. If you think of a guest that's perfect for our interview series, or if you have any comments, I would love to hear from you. Just search for Joyce Tang San Diego on LinkedIn. So now, go kick some butts.